Welcome. We're diving into some research about Google Glass today and its potential for activity recognition. We've got some research here from Ishimaru Kunze and others from the 2014 Augmented Human International Conference. They were looking at how to use Google Glass to identify what someone is doing just by analyzing their blinks and head movements. Can you give us an overview of this research?
Certainly. This research really highlights how data from sensors not specifically designed for a task can be utilized in innovative ways. The researchers focused on Google Glass, a device not initially intended for activity recognition.
So they were thinking outside the box a little with this then.
Precisely. They cleverly employed Google Glass's infrared proximity sensor. This sensor, typically used to detect if the device is being worn, emits infrared light and measures its reflection.
So it can detect very small changes in distance, like when an eyelid closes during a blink.
Exactly. The researchers realized that these blink patterns captured by this sensor could reveal information about the user's cognitive load.
Cognitive load. That's a term we hear quite often these days. Could you elaborate on what cognitive load is and how it relates to this research?
Cognitive load refers to the mental effort required for a particular task. For instance, reading a complex scientific paper demands a higher cognitive load than casually browsing social media. The researchers proposed that this cognitive load could be discerned through subtle cues in our blink patterns.
And they used Google Glass to capture these cues. How did they go about this?
They had participants wear Google Glass while engaging in a range of activities, from passive ones like watching a movie to more physically demanding tasks like sawing wood. Throughout these activities, Google Glass diligently recorded the participants' blink patterns.
So while someone is engrossed in a film, Google Glass is tracking every blink.
Yeah.
What did they do with this data? Did they simply count the number of blinks?
It involved more than just counting the blinks. They delved into statistical analysis. First, they established a baseline blink frequency for each participant. Then they analyzed how this frequency deviated during different activities. But they didn't stop there. They went a step further and actually extracted three features from these blink patterns to create a feature vector for analysis.
A feature vector. Could you break down what these features were and what kind of information they provide?
Of course. The three features they analyzed were the mean blink frequency, the X center of mass of the frequency histogram, and the A center of mass of the frequency histogram. Imagine visualizing the distribution of blinks on a graph. The center of mass indicates whether this distribution leans towards higher or lower frequencies for a specific activity. Mm. Essentially, it's not just about how often someone blinks, but also the specific pattern of those blinks that's important.
Fascinating. So based on these blink patterns alone, could they actually identify what someone was doing with a degree of accuracy?
Yes, they could. Just using these blink patterns, they achieved an average accuracy of 67% across all participants and activities.
67%? That's pretty remarkable. But you mentioned they incorporated data from an additional sensor as well, right? An accelerometer. What role did that play in their research?
While blink patterns alone provided valuable insights, they hypothesized that incorporating data on physical movement might enhance the accuracy. The accelerometer in Google Glass, which measures acceleration, allowed them to capture data on head movements.
That's a logical progression. Different activities naturally involve distinct head movements. Someone reading a book will likely have minimal head movement, while someone sawing wood will have much more pronounced movements.
Precisely. They incorporated the analysis of head movement variants derived from the accelerometer alongside the blink patterns. Generally, more movement suggested a more physically intensive activity.
Did this combination of data from the two sensors improve their findings?
It did, significantly. By combining blink and accelerometer data, the accuracy of their activity recognition jumped from 67% to an impressive 82%.
That's quite a substantial improvement. Pairing those two data sources seems to have been quite effective. To help visualize and understand their findings, the researchers used something called a confusion matrix. Could you explain what a confusion matrix is and how it helps to interpret the results?
Certainly. A confusion matrix is a visual tool, essentially a table, that helps us understand the performance of a classification model. In this case, the model is trying to classify activities. In a confusion matrix, the rows represent the actual activity being performed, while the columns represent what the system predicted the activity to be.
So the intersections of those rows and columns would indicate either a success, where the system correctly identified the activity, or a failure where it got it wrong.
Yes, exactly. The more successes or hits we see along the diagonal of that matrix, the better the system is at accurately classifying activities. This matrix provides a clear picture of which activities the system was good at differentiating and which ones proved to be more challenging.
Were there any activities that the system consistently struggled to differentiate?
The system could readily distinguish between activities like talking and watching. These activities involve significantly different head movements and blink patterns. However, it struggled to differentiate between activities such as reading, solving math problems, and sawing wood.
Because those activities might have more similar blink patterns and head movements.
Precisely. The subtle differences in those physical cues made it difficult for the system to accurately classify those specific activities. This underscores the limitations of even a dual sensor approach, especially when trying to differentiate between activities that involve similar levels of cognitive load or physical exertion.
It seems like more sophisticated sensors, or perhaps additional data sources, would be needed to capture those nuances for really precise activity recognition. Even with these limitations, the potential of this technology is quite impressive, especially considering this research was conducted back in 2014. What advancements in sensor technology and machine learning since then could further enhance this field?
The advancements in recent years have been significant. We now have access to sensors that are smaller, more energy efficient, and far more sensitive than what was available in 2014. Couple that with the advancements in machine learning, particularly in its ability to process vast amounts of data and recognize complex patterns, and the potential for highly accurate and nuanced activity recognition becomes very real.
We could potentially go beyond simply identifying basic activities. We could potentially even identify subtle emotional states or cognitive processes.
Indeed. The possibilities are vast.
The potential applications in healthcare alone are significant. Physicians could utilize this technology to monitor patients with conditions like Parkinson's or Alzheimer's disease.
Certainly. Imagine being able to detect subtle changes in a patient's motor skills or cognitive function. This technology could provide early warning signs and allow for more timely interventions.
Or consider the potential in education. By understanding student engagement and learning patterns, educators could tailor their teaching methods for each student, making learning more effective and personalized. The applications across various fields are immense. However, it's crucial to also consider the potential limitations of this technology. The researchers themselves acknowledged the small sample size of their study, only 8 participants, all male.
That's an important point. With such a limited sample size, it becomes difficult to confidently generalize the findings to a larger, more diverse population. We can't definitively say that women or individuals from different age groups would exhibit the same blink patterns or head movements for those specific activities. More research, with a much broader range of participants, is definitely needed to validate and refine these findings.
And we must also consider that this research was conducted in a controlled laboratory environment. This differs significantly from the complexities and unpredictability of real-world scenarios. How do you think this controlled setting might have affected their results?
That's another valid consideration. Our blink patterns and head movements might change in familiar environments or when surrounded by various distractions that we encounter in our daily lives. Further research is necessary to understand how this technology would perform in more realistic settings.
And let's not forget the limitations of the sensors themselves. The infrared proximity sensor, while surprisingly effective in this context, wasn't designed for this specific purpose.
Right. Factors like lighting conditions or even an individual's facial structure could potentially affect the accuracy of the sensor. And while the accelerometer does a good job of capturing overall head movement, it can't differentiate between subtle movements. For example, it can't distinguish between a nod of agreement and a shake of disapproval.
Those nuances could be crucial for accurately recognizing and interpreting activity, which further emphasizes the need for even more advanced sensing technology, or perhaps the integration of data from multiple sources. So it seems that even with advanced sensors, the interpretation of the data is crucial. A blink on its own can be ambiguous. While there might be correlations between blink patterns and cognitive load, it's not always so straightforward, is it?
Not at all. Various factors can influence our blink patterns. Fatigue, medications, even environmental factors like dry air or bright lights can all play a role. If we solely attribute meaning to these physiological signals without considering the broader context, we risk misinterpreting the data.
A yawn, for instance, could be misconstrued as disinterest, when in reality the person might just be tired. It seems that we need to develop systems that are sophisticated enough to account for these nuances for accurate and reliable activity recognition. As this technology continues to advance, what steps can we take to ensure its responsible development and application?
Transparency and accountability are paramount. We need to be clear about how these systems work, what data they collect, and how that data is used. Open discussion and collaboration between researchers, developers, policymakers, and the public are essential to address ethical concerns and establish guidelines for responsible use.
It's crucial to have those conversations early on to mitigate potential risks and ensure that this technology is used ethically and responsibly. This has been a fascinating exploration into the world of blink-based activity recognition. It's clear that this technology, while still in its early stages, holds immense potential.
It certainly does. This research demonstrates how we can leverage readily available data in creative and insightful ways. It paves the way for exciting advancements, not just of activity recognition, but in various fields.
It's a powerful reminder that innovation often lies in looking at existing technologies and data with fresh eyes, exploring new possibilities and applications. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the fascinating intersection of human behavior, sensor technology, and machine learning.